Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. What is the real food of life? In today's broadcast, we continue our look at the familiar Bible stories, focusing today on the feeding of the 5,000. Now, is this just a story about a sack lunch in a rural area? I don't think so. Join me now as we see beyond the miracle and explore why any of us would participate in a religious ceremony if the power of God were right before us within our very life. Learn about Jesus' Passover alternative right now in today's broadcast. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to another edition of Beyond Everything Radio. So glad to have you here. Welcome to the program, especially if it's your first time tuning in. If you're coming back for a second, third, fourth, or multiple times, wow, thank you so much for doing that. I'd like to welcome you to the program and welcome to Sunday. You know, each week I invite you to go to my website, www.com, and look for Winder's Windshield. There you can sign up for my weekly newsletter, and you and I can begin a dialogue. If you have questions about the content, because I know this is a little different than what you're probably used to hearing, I would love to engage in a dialogue with you. If you have feedback for me, positive or negative, I'm happy to hear it all. Go to kevinwinder.com, sign up for Winder's Windshield. When you do, you're going to get every single radio program that I've done. You'll have access to more than 2 years of my podcast called The KevCast and over 6 years of blog posts. And not to mention, every week, every Sunday morning, you'll get content sent right to you that's going to build you up and inspire you and keep you plugged in. Thanks for going to my website, kevinwinder.com. Sign up for Winder's Windshield. Do it today. I'd be so glad if you did. Now, folks, we have been looking at familiar Bible stories. Now, it might seem, if you're unfamiliar with the Bible, that I'm jumping around a little bit, but I'm not. I'm actually working our way through the book of John. I'm teaching exegetically. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, but I'm doing it in an unconventional way. And I think this is really important. Why? Because our goal is to retell familiar stories so that we can hear them again for the very first time. And what that means is we have to somehow mine the content in a deeper, nuanced way. Well, today our subject, our title of our talk is called Bread for Everyone. That's right, Bread for Everyone. And like I said earlier, we've been revisiting Bible stories, and we're trying to hear them again for the first time, which means, gosh, I'm faced with the challenge of trying to say something new about texts that have been read and preached on and talked about for thousands of years. And if this is going to happen, that means we have to come to these texts, this scripture, from a very different perspective. And if you've listened to me at all, then you know I do that. I do come at things from a very different perspective. Some say I might be too critical. Some say I might be a little harsh. But you know, I'm an online pastor, and I've spent 25 years in church ministry, and I've got a lot of skin in the game. And I got to tell you that there's a perspective that I bring to the table that I think will really help. Now, this doesn't make the process less exegetical. Right? By having a different perspective doesn't mean I'm going off the reservation with regard to the practice of interpreting the Bible. But it does reframe how the content is actually mined. You see, rather than using a line-by-line extraction from the original language, I actually just pull back and capture the larger thoughts within the original language and the textual timeline. Now, what that does is that gives us a 30,000-foot view. Rather than just getting into the weeds on something small and tiny and pedantic, we stay into the larger meta-narrative of Scripture, where everything ultimately comes together. Now, if you're used to the smaller perspective, maybe it seems like I'm all over the place, and that may be true. It's like I'm seasoning my soup with a lot of different ingredients, but I put them there for your benefit. And today, we are looking at John chapter 6 and the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. Now, this is a very familiar sermon. I mean, it's in every Sunday school class, even as much as you'd find an Abraham made out of a tongue depressor and a cotton ball. This is everywhere. And, you know, most sermons that talk about this really just use the feeding of the 5,000 to prove that Jesus was God, that this big miracle took place. And sure, there's nothing wrong with that. And the common application that we see within our churches and on this story is often that, you know, God can do much with very little, right? And that does kind of bubble to the surface of the story that, you know, God can take a sack lunch and feed all the people. He can take what you think is not very much with your life and turn it into something big and spectacular. And those applications are good. There's nothing wrong with those. But I think there's more than a story about a sack lunch in a rural area. And today we're going to get at it, okay? And what we have to do in order to do that is realize that this miracle requires a context. And this context really proves my exegetical process. If any of you had doubts behind the scenes of what I'm doing, this should prove it out, okay? And I've shown over the last few weeks how Jesus' miracles actually cause him to gain notoriety. And it's notoriety that he doesn't actually really want. It's not the right kind. And I've also shown that through his miracles, Jesus is subverting religious institutions. And if you're new to the program, then you missed an 8-week series on how subversive the message and work of John the Baptist and Jesus were. So I invite you to go back and learn about that if you haven't. And so I talk a lot about this subversive message. Why? Because we are living in a religious frameworks and we need to hear it, even though it isn't always easy to hear. Okay? And Jesus is subverting religious institutions by proclaiming to everybody that God is no longer quarantined in the ritual. He's not stuck or found within the religious practice. And that is shocking to the religious rulers of the time. It's also pretty shocking to many of us in modern day too. And so the message still rings true. In John chapter 5, verse 19 through 46, what we see there is what I call a tweener. It's the verses that fall between his miracles. And I want you to know that these verses are not filler. They are square in the face confrontations with the ruling leaders of the religious class. Jesus basically emasculates the containment system that claims to know God, which is just the religion of the day, but somehow questions who Jesus is. I mean, this proves that if religion had any idea who God was or how God acts, that the people within it would be receptive to Jesus, who was sent by God to do God's work. And the whole discourse is really about the fact that the most religious people, the people who should know better, have no ability to see God's own prophet and son right before their very eyes. You see, religion diminishes Jesus' work because it wasn't done according to the tradition. And like I showed you last week with the breaking of the Sabbath in order to heal the invalid, he does not follow the rules entirely, right? Basically, rule-keeping is the best religion can offer. And Jesus comes along and says, I'm not opposed to rule-keeping, but when rule-keeping violates the heart of humanity and love, then it's game on. You see, Jesus is offering something different, and it is very subversive to religious power and institutional power. And so by chapter 6, John is actually recording a movement, and this doesn't show up too often in our passages when we're talking about the feeding of the 5,000, and that's because we're not reading that miracle within the context of the pages before and the pages after the miracle. But these are vital because, you see, a movement is taking place. It's really a cage fight that is emerging. It's an MMA smackdown, if you will. And it's religion in one corner, and it's Jesus' unorthodoxy in the other. It's his uncommon practices in the other side. You see, the setting is the Passover, which is a very big religious holiday It takes place in early spring, and that's usually the time where the people would make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Except in verse 1 of chapter 6, we see that Jesus is actually heading in the opposite direction. Why isn't Jesus heading on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem? You see, the crowd that follows Jesus is not local. They came from all over. They came by boat. They came by land. They came from everywhere. And the crowd has been growing from all over that region. And basically, it's because they've seen and heard about the miracles that he's performed. And they all want a piece of their own little miracle. They all want their loved ones and themselves to be healed. And they all want that blessing and that contact. And I understand that. But we need to see that this crowd has grown because of Jesus' notoriety. And if Jesus is going in the opposite direction, and the crowds are following Jesus, then what we have is we have the numbers being down at the temple, right? People are not going to church, so to speak. Here's the big Passover celebration, the festival, the rites of passage, the religious experience, and yet the people are not coming. You see, masses are electing to follow the man who claims to come from God rather than go to the religious delivery system. I mean, why do the rituals in the temple when the power of God is clearly out among the people? And let's just face it, that nuance is probably something that most pastors who preach it from a pulpit in a building on a Sunday will not really want to discuss or talk about or explain or expose, right? Because the implication is quite clear. If you can find God somewhere other than church on Sunday morning, it begs the question as to why you need to be there on Sunday morning, doesn't it? And that's a very unpopular and even risque or unorthodox perspective. Now, go figure, that's exactly what Jesus is saying. Now, barley is a plant that blooms early in the spring, okay? And get this, because something big is coming on this. It's not incidental that the boy with the sack lunch during the story of the healing is bringing around barley loaves, okay? You have to understand that barley is considered the first fruits because it bloomed early. And the first fruits are that which historically are offered to God. Now, Leviticus 18, chapter 18, verse 13, gets at this a little bit. And Jesus follows Leviticus here. He offers the barley loaves to God in verse 11. And then he gives the barley loaves to all the people. Now, this is easily missed here, right? In the Jewish religion, the barley loaf, the first fruits, the offering, was really only offered by Aaron, who worked in the temple, or the tabernacle, if you remember. That's Moses' brother. And it was reserved only for Aaron's family because of his proximity. It was his blessing because of the proximity of serving God in the tabernacle. And so what Jesus is doing here is he's actually extending Aaron's portion to everybody. Now, that would have been unheard of in the Leviticus days of ancient Judaism, where the first fruits are offered to God and then not just shared with the priest, but they're shared with everybody, even the unclean ones. That's exactly what Jesus is doing. You see, he's saying Passover is no longer for the religious elite. Passover, where God passes over the sins of humanity, that is for all comers now. Everybody gets some. And guess what? There's a ton left over. That's a huge message of grace, folks. And I hope that that's new to your ears. See, what Jesus is saying, he's saying everybody gets the blessing of Passover. And guess what? You get it without having to journey to Jerusalem. You get the blessing of Passover without homage to religious leaders. You get it without offering a sacrifice. You get it without a worthiness contest. You get it without any kind of ritual or rite of passage. Everyone gets plenty. Verse 12. See, no one is left out. The judgment of God has passed over everyone. No exclusions. There's no tribal, economic, or religious distinctions out there in the wilderness where Jesus is at. You see, if they would have gone to the pilgrimage to Jerusalem, there would have been all kinds of tribal, economic, and religious distinctions between who's in and who's out. But here Jesus is saying, the bread is for everyone. Now, the feeding of the 5,000 is a countercultural Passover for those who either can't or won't buy in to the religious pilgrimage. Think of it. The religious pilgrimage was for those who actually could. But if you're too poor or you're an invalid and you can't go, then it's not even on the table for you. You see, that whole structure was for those who would rather see God than do religion. Do you get that? What Jesus' feeding of the 5,000 is for all those people who'd rather come and see God than do religion. They're like, why would we go to the temple when the power of God is right here, right now? There's nothing that's going to happen in the temple that can't possibly happen with God right here among us. And the fact that there's 12 baskets left over is not incidental, right? This ensured that each disciple would have a memento of what the new Passover would look like. Personal experience is everything, folks. In verse 640, it says, everyone seeing the Son and believing will have eternal life. And that word seeing is, in verse 40, therion. It means experiencing. So it's like everyone experiencing the Son will have eternal life. And so it's not so much about where you go or the religious experience that you have or the rituals that you do. It's about your inner experience. Now, that is a sermon in itself. But let me add another layer here, okay? This miracle is best seen within the context of the following Bread of Life discourses in verse 22 through 59. That's a huge passage, and man, if you haven't read it, it gets into it. Jesus is here again taking on the religious elite. You see, these texts are really Jesus' clinic on what the Passover really should be, and he's giving it to the religious who are either in Jerusalem during the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000, or they were on their way back after it. In verse 24 and 25, you can kind of see that. And when he talks about being the bread that has come down from heaven, they like, well, if you're from heaven, what sign do you give? Well, he just fed 5,000 people. So clearly the people he's engaging with were not there. That's how I get that. Okay. Now, both passages begin, the bread of life and the miracle passage of the feeding of the 5,000, both start with a crowd, verse 2 and verse 22. And both sought Jesus because of his signs, verse 2 and verse 24. And both point to the fact that Jesus is the prophet of God who has come into the world to do God's work. And you see that in verses 4 and verse 29. So you have these strong parallel passages. And just like the tweener passage that we saw in chapter 5, this passage of the bread of life is square in the face of the religious who struggle with believing that God can work outside of their particular framework. Verse 30. Now, think about that for a minute. Do you know anybody like that, that insists that God is only showing up as God when it's within my particular framework, when it's within a particular structure? Well, they talked about God, but they didn't mention Jesus. They didn't say they were Christians, so they're not talking about the same God. They're not talking about the same experience. You know, that's the kind of thing that Jesus is actually getting at here. He is debunking that. So let's go back to the cage match. Have you ever talked about God with a very religious person? If so, then you probably know how that goes, don't you? You know how certain a religious person actually is. They are not humble, they're certain. They bring up tradition, they bring up protocol, they bring up obedience, they bring up rules and laws and strictness, right? They talk historically. It's exactly what happens in this discourse. And yet Jesus reframes their tradition about manna in the wilderness and say, yeah, I get it. You know, you guys are into manna and you talk about it, but I'm the bread of life. And so he's reframing their tradition and demonstrating that something greater than Solomon is here right now. Now, you get that quote from Matthew 12:42, where he says, you know, the queen of the south is going to rise up and judge you guys because, you know, she came all the way to hear the greatness of Solomon. Right now, something greater than Solomon is here, right? He's bringing out that the presence of God, the power of God, the work of God is here and it's now. And yet you're still trying to force people into a system. Now, the manna in the wilderness is a great story that Judaism has retold for centuries. That's fine. And yet, a day earlier, bread was given to thousands of people in the wilderness. You see the difference here, the contrast? You've got religion, which entombs God into the past, while Jesus proves God's work is here and now, in the present. The burden of belief in Jesus' hearing, in the hearing of Jesus' word, has been lowered to believing only the miracle before you today. No longer do you have to hold on to some historical bar that's raised so high. And a bar based on historical belief is really too high for most people. Just think about how often pastors struggle to try and convince the modern scientific mind that historical biblical truth is the basis for belief. Yeah, you can get at it sometimes, but you miss it more often than not. And so this is the meaning of the bread of life. Do we go back to the story of manna, or do we wake up to the bread before us today? That was Jesus' ultimate question. You see, I'm critical of the church, and I get this critique sometimes, that sometimes people say I'm too mean, or I'm too critical, or I must be just angry, or I take pot shots, I'm not loving. It's not true, folks. I'm critical of the church, not because I'm disgruntled or angry, but because I seek its reform. I think we're missing it so often the time. I believe we become too focused on building the historical case for belief that we've lost the ability to see the bread before us today. And all over the world, people are having amazing, transforming experiences with life. Yet the most religious people among us still insist that God can only be experienced and understood within their own preferred framework. They've got God in a box, and if your expression, your experience doesn't fit in that box, then you have a diminished or invalid experience. And I don't think that's right. I think this passage teaches otherwise. This story reminds us that the bread of life is for everybody. The nuance is that the unbeliever is not the irreligious person. And that's what we're told when we're knee deep in our religious frameworks, right? We're told that we are all the in people and all the other people are unbelievers, and they're the outies. They're the star-bellied sneeches without stars on their belly. But this story flips the script like all of Jesus' good miracles. You see, the unbeliever is the religious person here. The religious person is the one who can't see that the bread of God has come down from heaven and gives life to the world. You see that in verse 33. And so, folks, this is a sobering place for us to reflect and consider what is taking place in this story. Yeah, we've seen the story about the sack lunch that fed so many people. And we know that God can do a lot with a little. But folks, the bread of life and the manna from heaven, it's all coming together in the power of God before us. And the countercultural movement that Jesus is bringing, the movement away from the temple when everybody was going towards it, the fact that he's taking his own movement of people and not going in that direction, tells us that there's something big here and now that we need to discover. And so I would encourage you, if you could, to open your eyes and see the bread of life before you. That was Jesus' call to the religious and to the people among him then, and that's his call today. May we all discover the bread of life that's found within every moment of every day. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.